Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7.
Hi listeners, today is another day of Political Point of View with Graham Priest. Today's guest is ACLIST MP Simon Court, who happens to be based in Auckland. Simon, congratulations on making Parliament again. Well done. And for once, I actually correctly forecast the results of the election, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, we're pretty happy too, Graham. ACT got its largest share of the party vote, and 11 MPs into Parliament, which is the greatest number of MPs that ACT has managed to bring to Parliament. So we're very happy with the result.
Well, you've got a few good people in amongst that.
We certainly do. Well, we have 11 good people, but we have some with specific skills and experience, like Andrew Hoggart, who has a farming background and was president of Federated Farmers. We have Dr. Paranjit Palmer, who was an MP in a previous administration and has joined the team with her background in small business, but science and innovation as well. So we've brought some fantastic new people into the mix to complement our existing team.
Well, that was something that was sadly lacking in the previous government. There was very little in the way of science, very little in the way of practical common sense, or very little in the way of people that had worldly experience apart from politics. And I think it showed.
Yeah, it certainly does. As we are discovering more and more about the mess that the previous Labor government left behind, it's quite clear that while they had great ambitions for New Zealand, they had no idea how to translate that into public policy and then delivery and implementation of good policy. So we do have a big task to turn New Zealand around, but we have a 100 days plan to set the scene, and then we have a plan through the coalition agreements between ACT and National and New Zealand First, which set out the legislative and regulation and policy agenda for the next 3 years. As many people have pointed out, there's a lot to do. There's probably as much as we could possibly do in 3 years in that coalition agreement.
So you think it's time for a four-year parliament?
That is one of the items that our coalition agreement with National includes. We think that it's worthwhile having that discussion with New Zealanders. We think that a four-year term in the future would help give future governments an opportunity to actually deliver a lot of the outcomes. That if you start in year one, it's taken 6 weeks to get from election to agreement. Then we've appointed ministers. Now ministers need to get their staff on board. We need to draft legislation. All of those things take time. So by the time you introduce your first bill into the House and then pass it, even if it is under urgency, that could take somewhere between 3 to 4 months, and then the effects of that policy in legislation can often, particularly if you're setting up new agencies, like our government proposes to set up a national infrastructure agency to replace up to 7 existing agencies of government, everything from the Department of Prime Minister, Cabinet, to Treasury, Infrastructure Commission, MB, they've all got infrastructure divisions. Why do we need 7? Each one with their own budget and overhead. But if we want to bring it all together into a national infrastructure agency, create more cohesion, give more oversight over the pipeline of work, and then more funding mechanisms, it's going to take the best part of 3 years to get that established. So we're hoping we can demonstrate concrete outcomes in the three-year term, but a four-year term, you could be absolutely guaranteed that if you took the right actions at the start of a term, during year four, you would start to see things being built, for example. It's very difficult to do that within 3 years.
It's quite interesting. It looks to me as if Parliament should probably look at having a flat management system. There's a very large company that my daughter works for several years ago got rid of all these single silos where everybody did everything within their own department, and there was very little communication between them. And they've swapped to a flat governing system, which took a while to get sorted out, but it now works brilliantly, far more efficient, and everybody knows what's happening. How did you find the election itself in 2023?
Well, the election campaign was quite different to 2020. In 2020, it was disrupted by COVID lockdowns and shutdowns and travel restrictions, and people were in an extremely heightened state. And many people had been mandated out of work or had been separated from loved ones by the border closures, for example. So all of that sense of disruption in 2020 was replaced in 2023 with a sense of, oh my goodness, this country has really run off the rails. We're desperate for real change. Could you just please hurry up and have the election so we can have a better government? There was a real sense that Kiwis had reached the end of their tether with the previous government.
Okay, did you find any nastiness in your campaign?
My experience in 2023 was spending a lot of time in rural and regional New Zealand, as much time there as I did in Auckland, where I live, was that most people were just interested in the details. How are you going to improve things, say, for example, for farmers? And how are you going to improve the freshwater regulations so that we still have an improved trajectory in water quality, but we don't have all the red tape and regulation making it harder for farmers or people who want to produce things to use their land and water? So they were actually wanting specific solutions, and they wanted to know, had MPs, had candidates, did we have the answers to their specific concerns? And we've done a lot of policy work over the last 3 years. We've released, 87 policies, many of which became part of our election manifesto and then part of our 100 days agreement and coalition agreement. So we were able to offer a lot of confidence to people, and I think that's why ACT got the largest share of the party vote that we've ever managed, and 11 MPs into Parliament. We didn't get a lot of negativity. I don't remember much at all, the occasional one finger or two fingered salute from people who might have objected to our signs when we were standing on the side of the road. But, you know, I mean, I worked in construction for a long time. That's water off a duck's back to me, Graham.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are a few other candidates that didn't have such a happy time. What's happened post-election?
Well, post-election, we had to wait for the votes to be counted, and while they were being counted, the party leaders and some of our key staff got together and sketched out what the process for developing a coalition agreement would look like. We wanted it to be comprehensive. ACT, MPs and portfolio spokespeople like myself brought our detailed policy prescription to those meetings, and elements of each party's prescription was then developed into a coalition agreement. Now, these things do take time. Imagine it was a business negotiation between three businesses, each with its own customer base and its own distribution network and wanting to deliver different things for its customers, but all agreeing that we need real change and that we need to get the country's budget and finances under control, and we need to reduce the interference that government has in people's lives. And we need to remove some of the divisive approach that the previous government had taken with Crown Māori relations, for example. So over that six-week period, an agreement was reached, and we now have very specific and measurable policy objectives in each agreement that each party is seeking to now deliver over the next 3 years. And that's why David Seymour said that the agreement should be released in full, and that New Zealanders are expected to hold ACT and the other parties to account for what they've delivered when we get to the next election in 2026.
Okay, so what's your role in the new structure?
Well, I have a relatively unique role. I'm like a minister outside of cabinet. My title is Parliamentary Undersecretary for Infrastructure and for Resource Management Reform. They're two areas that I've had a long interest in as a civil engineer, someone who's had to get resource consents. I've been involved in trying to get plan changes over the line for various programs and projects. And so I now have an opportunity to work in the executive, supporting the Minister for Infrastructure and the Minister for RMA Reform, that's Honourable Chris Bishop, in developing the policy and then implementing the policy changes that we need. Say, for example, standing up a process and so on.
Previously, you were on the Select Committee for the RMA Reform. So that would have given you a fair insight as to what was working and what wasn't working.
That's right. And so I hope to be able to contribute much of that principled thinking into long-term legislation to replace the RMA. But in the short term, what we need to do is stand up a fast-track consenting process for the many, many dozens of projects and programs and developments which have been stalled in Environment Court, stalled in High Court, stalled in Supreme Court, or even stalled under the previous Labor Minister, David Parker's own fast-track consenting process, where he said, send it to me on the fast-track or I don't know what to do. So we have a lot of work to do to sort that out, and I'm very pleased to be in a position and the coalition government where I can have some influence over that.
The new RMA Act is very complex, isn't it? There's, what, 1,000-odd pages?
1,000 pages in the Natural and Built Environments Act. Councils are currently forced to implement it, although they will be issued with a stop work notice in due course. And it's not helping people who want to build things, even government's own agencies, like NZTA or KiwiRail, actually get on with the business of building transport infrastructure, for example. So we have to get onto that very quickly. It's in the 100 days plan.
Excellent. Okay. So what are the major projects initially, and when will they happen?
So are you asking about infrastructure projects or policy projects?
Well, the major programs that are really urgent, that you consider urgent.
So one of the major programs is to stand up a national infrastructure agency, because at the moment there's all kinds of agencies, whether it's Kāinga Ora building houses, Kiwi Rail trying to build ferry terminals, NZTA trying to build roads, Free Waters assets and infrastructure that council owns, and so many different parts of government have a view on how infrastructure should be delivered, how it should be funded and financed, how those assets should be managed in the long term. And what we need to do through a national infrastructure agency is to put some coherent framework, guidelines, systems around that. So instead of a minister saying, I've got an idea for a light rail, like a minister did in a previous government, and by the way, I'm not doing the business case on it for 3 years while my officials work out where the stations are, you actually go through the gateway test first. How does this project stack up? Is it needed as part of a regional transport plan, for example? So the big program in infrastructure is establishing a national infrastructure agency, getting that agency to be the funding channel for private and institutional capital, our Kiwi savers, our super funds, as well as the government share, to put that into a much improved infrastructure pipeline. And then, of course, another major program in my portfolio area is resource management reform. But that includes a whole lot of other smaller parts along the way. Like, for example, reforming the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management, which currently has a whole lot of prohibitions and controls over the way people use land in respect to water. And we need to reform some of those smaller, what they call national instruments, in parallel to the overall resource management reform program. And then, of course, you get into things like justice, for example. Kiwis want to know that people who commit crimes face consequences. Now, the previous Labor government reduced the prison population by about a third. There's a lot of empty bunks in the prisons, and there's a lot of bad people running around not facing consequences for harming others or stealing and robbing. And so in order to deliver on our commitment to make Kiwis safer, we need to get some controls in place, bring back three strikes, bring back harsher and immediate penalties for youth offenders, so they're not wondering 9 months from now which offence it is I'm in court for, so that they get consequences immediately within days or weeks of committing an offence that qualifies. So those are some of the major programs that we have in train as part of the 100 days plan. But again, there's 50 things on that list, Brad. There's just three.
Yep. Maybe unclogging the court system might help immeasurably.
You make a good point, and on that note, one of our ministers, Nicole McKee, has been appointed to the Minister of Courts, and I was in her office today, and she was describing to me some of the problems that courts have, some of which are IT and programming and scheduling, some of which is the availability of judges, but a lot of which is just the fact that the whole system is completely out of date for the 21st century. So
it was out of date actually in the 20th century.
I don't doubt it.
What ministerial positions has ACT managed to obtain?
Well, David Seymour has roles as the Minister for Regulatory Reform, which is an overarching role to test the quality of any new laws that are proposed by this government against, look, the test being, hey, if we pass this law, firstly, will it do what it says it will do? Will this law actually solve the problem for New Zealanders that it claims to? And what are the costs and what are the benefits? And who pays? Because many well-meaning politicians have announced laws or announced policies in the past, like the previous Labor Housing Minister, Phil Twyford, and his 100,000 Kiwi built homes, but without actually having done an analysis of, well, how would you build them? Who would you build them? Who will pay? And who gets the benefits? They're very basic questions. So David will be in charge of a ministry that will be applying that rigor to every part of government, and including looking at historical red tape and regulation, in particular that, say, affects farmers, or the early childhood sector. David also has Minister for Associate for Health with respect to the Farm Act agency. So he will be focused on how to reform Farm Act to give Kiwis better access to modern medicines and to introduce a new way of thinking about health, which actually says, well, if funding a medicine that stops somebody ending up in hospital needing an operation is cheaper for the government, then of course we should fund it. But currently that's not in Farnak's remit. So just introducing some very basic cost-benefit problem-solving to Farnak. Nicole McKee is the Minister of Courts, so described, and Brooke Van Velden has roles as the Minister for Workplace Safety and Workplace Relations, so she'll be responsible for repealing the fair pay agreements and some of the other extremely onerous regulations on employers, which made them reluctant to hire people and give people a chance at the margins. So we'll be getting rid of the 90-day trials. We'll be reintroducing a 90-day trial period with no risk and no fault for employers and employees, and Brooke Van Velden will be in charge of that. Andrew Hoggard, he has an associate role in agriculture. He's also the Minister in charge of biosecurity and food safety. And Karen Chua, who has personal experience growing up as a child in Stoke Clare, she will be the Minister for Children. So in addition to my portfolio as Undersecretary, there are six of us in the executive who will be responsible for delivering ACT policy for the people who voted for ACT, but also to improve the lives of all New Zealanders.
Good. Okay, so what's the future of Wellington Let's Get Moving?
Well, Let's Get Wellington Moving as a project is going to end. They're going to be put on a stop work notice if that hasn't been issued already. It will be very shortly. And the project, which is in three parts, one of which was the New Zealand Transport Agency's project to put a second tunnel through Mount Victoria, that will go back to that agency. Wellington City Council will be given the opportunity to take back the management of its Lambton Quay or Golden Mile upgrade, assuming they want to keep doing that. And Wellington Regional Council will be given the opportunity to take back ownership and responsibility over delivering better public transport on the existing road network. The bringing those three projects together was not a good idea. They have little commonality in terms of size, scale, and the level of control that each party unfortunately exercised over each other. So that will all stop, but some of that work will continue but become the responsibility of the organisations that it should sit with.
Okay, what about the tunnel? Mount Vic Tunnel?
Well, I've seen some examples of the Mount Vic Tunnel design that the previous government tabled, but they excluded a whole lot of other options that make sense if you're thinking about the long term. If the traffic problem crossing Wellington from west to east and east to west was going to be solved by putting a tunnel through Mount Victoria, potentially you could solve it by just having a longer tunnel that starts back at the terrace and goes all the way through to the other side of Mount Victoria, rather than having to come up on the surface, rather than having to take all that traffic through Zip Street. So I think what KASAHI, or as we call it, again, New Zealand Transport Agency, will have an opportunity to reflect on what they're trying to deliver to unlock the city streets, to get traffic off those surface streets, reduce congestion, and provide opportunities for better public transport through through modern roads, then that project could look quite different. But it also could be delivered much more quickly than on the previous Let's Get Wellington Moving timeframe.
Well, let's hope that something actually does get moving, because it's grossly constipated. What's the future of Three Waters?
Well, the Three Waters legislation that Labor passed, which established co-governance of water companies that stripped council's assets and put them into a water entity, that's going to be gone in the first 100 days plan, and it will be replaced with legislation that requires councils to retain control of their assets, but will give them options to form council-controlled organisations where they can retain control and ownership, but actually put the day-to-day management of those assets and the responsibility for funding, finance, delivery, and asset maintenance into a council-controlled organisation. Now, that won't work for every council, so there's probably going to have to be two tracks. One for the larger growing metros and regions, and one track, a separate track for those councils which are struggling to provide basic infrastructure because they just don't have the population and the revenues to do so. And another thing we're going to have to consider is how we pay for this stuff. I mean, I've lived in Auckland most of my working life. We've had water meters since 1996. I come to Wellington where I live 30 weeks a year now, and I see drinking water running down the street. I know it's drinking water because when I put my hand down to check and smell it, it smells of chlorine. But apparently no one has a water meter in Wellington City. So it's a case of, you know, so tell, hear no evil, see no evil. That has to change. If people aren't paying for the water that they're using, if we're not actually measuring it and charging on a volumetric basis, if we don't value it, then we will never solve the problem of how to deliver better infrastructure. So all of those things have to happen along with the repeal. Maybe if Labor had started along that route, which is the advice they were given 3 or 4 years ago, they wouldn't have had a problem with Three Waters. But we still have to fix that.
Yeah, well, when the Kapiti Coast District Council introduced water meters, against the will of a large number of people, they suddenly discovered that nearly half the water that was coming out of the purification plant was disappearing without being used. And meters solved that because it showed where the leaks were.
That's right.
And it's worked. It's worked very well.
That's right. That's right, Graham.
Auckland Light Rail, I guess, has gone down the gurgler, has it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that project's cost New Zealand over $160 million, which is an outrageous amount of money to pay for an organisation, to hire a whole bunch of people to come up with a plan that didn't even include the location of the stations. So $160 million over 3 or 4 years, the previous government burned that money. That project will be ended, and I understand a review will be undertaken to work out what information from that project can be carried over, because we still need to solve the problem in Auckland, a city of 1.5 million that's going to grow to 2.5 million by 2050, of what do we do to provide the mass rapid transit in a city that's built on a very skinny isthmus and that's stretched out over 60 or 70 kilometres from north to south. So there's some quite significant technical issues to solve, but rather than picking one rail line and insisting that that was going to solve all of our problems, we need to take a step back and take a helicopter view as to how do you fund infrastructure, transport infrastructure for Auckland that enables its growth in an efficient way. So I'm sure that the new Transport Minister, National Simeon Brown, will be spending a bit of time thinking about that. And as both of us are Aucklanders, I'm sure we'll have a chance to catch up over a coffee and talk about what might work.
Traditionally, people have not accepted the fact that of rapid expansion. I can recall the first time that I went to Sydney, that was 1968. Population was almost 2.5 million, and now it's, what, five? And it's not very many years, so you're looking at something that was pretty much similar in size to Auckland, Greater Auckland now. So they've more than doubled their population in that time. So there's a lot of things have to happen to make that work.
Well, now, they certainly do. Mm. And there's two approaches you can take. I was in the US last year and visiting Dallas, Texas, and they built a whole lot of new roads funded by tolling, and along with that had come a whole lot of new residential and commercial and distribution centres. So Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area had become one of the largest generators of economic growth in the US in only 20 years. They did that by building the infrastructure. And I said, what else have they done in Texas that we could compare to? And they said, well, if you look down the road at Austin, Texas, very popular place, they have great music festivals, but they took the opposite approach, which is maybe if we don't build it, they won't come. Well, guess what? People did go to Austin, Texas, and now that city is completely gridlocked, so terrible traffic congestion, and the cost of housing has gone through the roof, whereas in Dallas, the complete opposite has happened. So I think there's some really good examples that we could look to around the world as to why we need to invest in infrastructure for growth, because people want to live in New Zealand, you know, and we should make sure that they can get around places and do business easily.
Okay, when are you going to bring in road user charges for electric vehicles?
Well, I understand that that will be within the next 6 months. We need to go into the next financial year starting July 2024 with an even playing field so that the vehicles using the road pay as they go.
Yep, okay. And we've run out of time again, so we'll catch up with you again probably, I would suggest, late January if that's suited.
It's fantastic, Graham. So to all the listeners on the Kapiti Coast, look, we're just getting stuck in this week. By the time we catch up again in late January, I'll have a few more updates for the listeners about where we've got to in executing the 100 Days Plan.
Great.
Until then, all the best.
This has been another session with Graham Priest with A Political Point of View and today's guest, Simon Court, ACT MP. Thank you for listening.
Political Point of View was made with the assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.